9 p.m. in the East, 8 p.m. in the Central United States, 7 o'clock in the mountains. At KSAV, it's 6 p.m.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Right you are, Dave. Once again, we're back talking Twilight Zone with the usual Twilight Zone gang. And here to introduce the group is your host, Bobby Neer. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Dan. Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. I'm Bobby Neer here this evening with another edition of Talking Twilight Zone. With me are our usual panelists, Kitty, Lynn, and Ken. And we are prepared to go forward with episodes number 9 and 10 from season one of that classic series. This evening, since we are taking on 2 episodes in one program, we are on a fast track and have little time to waste. So long-winded diatribes are unwelcome, and in the tradition of Dr. Heal Thyself, I will start out by shutting up myself and going to Lynn for her short summary and opinion of the episode, Perchance to Dream. Lynn?
Okay, thanks, Bobby. Well, Perchance to Dream is a strange and haunting episode, starting out with a man named Edward Hall, played very well by Richard Conte. He's a very distraught man, and understandably so. He walks into the lobby of a psychiatrist's office. The receptionist says, "We've been expecting you, Mr. Hall. Go right in." He goes in and proceeds to tell the psychiatrist, Dr. Rathman, played by John Larch, that he's been awake for 87 hours. He takes pills to stay awake. Why? Because he believes that if he falls asleep, he won't wake up again. But if he stays awake much longer, his bad heart condition will take a strain on him and kill him anyway. He's stuck between a rock and a hard place, or so we all think. He tells Dr. Rathman that when he falls asleep, he has recurring dreams of death. One in particular, the most disturbing one, involves an amusement park, where he happens to meet up with a woman who was a performer there known as Maya, the cat girl. Maya seduces him to the point where he can't resist her and lures him into a spooky funhouse, and then on a roller coaster ride that would most surely give him a heart attack. He then says he woke up just before she convinced him to jump off the roller coaster. Before that, he even told the doctor how when he was a kid, he could make the ship in a painting hanging in his family's house move just by looking at it, and how he crashed his car one night by imagining a person who wasn't really there sitting in the back seat of his car. After Edward spills his guts to the doctor, he decides there's nothing more the doctor can do for him. He proceeds to leave, he walks out the door, and he looks at the receptionist, who has the exact face of Maya. He frantically runs back into the doctor's office and tells him his receptionist is the woman from his dreams. The doctor assures him that she's not, and within seconds, Edward screams, jumps right through the window, and plummets about 15 stories below to his death. But no, he didn't. His whole conversation with Dr. Rathman was a dream. Edward fell asleep from exhaustion within seconds after the doctor told him to lie down on the couch. He then died of a heart attack in his sleep, but it all seemed real. I guess the ironic part is that the doctor thought he died peacefully. This was a very strange and, well, weird episode, and I just have to say that Suzanne Lord did a little bit of overacting here, especially with that evil laugh. In any case, good episode, but not even close to excellent, in my opinion. I like this episode because Richard Conte did a great job at playing the neurotic patient with the extremely overactive imagination. But seriously, who can really stay awake for 87 hours, pills or not? But anyway, we have an email here from Debbie Arkin, a new listener and a new member to our discussion group. Welcome, Debbie. And Debbie says, "I thought Perchance to Dream was a good episode, but it was very strange. It was a perfect zone episode, though, because he's dead and nobody knows he's dead. He died within seconds of lying on the shrink's couch. The whole interaction with the shrink is a dream. Can dead people dream?" Well, I don't know, Debbie. I never thought dead people could dream either, and I won't know the answer to that until I'm dead, but at that point, I won't be able to report back. So, Kitty, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, I liked it. I actually liked the actress, Suzanne Lords, who played Maya and the secretary. You know, I thought she was great, you know, and yeah, she is doing a bit of overacting, but I think that's the point of the show, is because it's supposed to be a dream, so everything is distorted in that dream. And, you know, and she, to me, she actually looks like she's having a good time playing this part, because when you think about the era that this show aired in, you didn't see a lot of women wearing cat suits and doing seductive dances. Now, granted, it's a tame dance by today's standards, but for that time period, this was kind of an outlandish type of show to see on TV. I liked it, and to me, the irony of it is that the man goes in to the psychiatrist's office, he lays down, but the fact of the matter is, we really, in the final analysis, we really don't know why he was there in the first place, because it turns out that entire conversation that he had was a dream. And that's what I find so ironic about it, is just we really just don't know why he was there to begin with. He just laid down and basically died. He had one last dream before he cashed out his chips. So those are my thoughts on it. So, Bobby or Ken, what do you think?
Ken, go ahead.
My neighbors down the street right now can hear me groaning over this episode. I rated it zero, lousy, pathetic, disgusting, boring, absolutely ridiculous. Have no interest ever to watch it again. I'm sorry, girls. I don't know what there is to like about it. The opening office scene and talking back and forth. You know, if I'm devoting my Friday night at 10 o'clock and I'm going to give you my 30 minutes, give me something. And this story gave me absolutely nothing. I could not engage in the character, Richard Conti. And even though Suzanne Lloyd has a pretty face, the amusement park and the props and the dark sky and the roller coaster was just all shallow and plastic. And the end scene just brought me into a maze, and I didn't see any point to the whole story. Big deal, you're dreaming, you die, you have a heart attack. I've seen it once. I will never see it again on any marathon. So I rated a zero, lousy. Sorry, guys. Go ahead, Bob.
Did he also say that he would probably put it in your bottom 10 of all time? Something like that?
I don't know if it's the worst. We'll see. Let's get through the whole series, and then I'll let you know which one is the number one clunker. But this one comes close.
Well, you know, I'm kind of in the middle on this. I did rate it a 3. But I did it mainly simply because I thought it was different, not because I thought it was so great. The story is very light. There's really not a lot there to link onto. And we don't know anything about anybody. And that's always a problem when there's a story and you get no background about anybody. You don't feel anything for them. I mean, so a man goes into a psychiatrist's office and I don't know a thing about him. It's like Kitty said, why is he there? What's his problem? Other than what he says, which is that I can't afford to go to sleep, I don't really know anything about him, so it's hard to get into that. But when I saw this, I was 12 years old when I saw this story, and I think what impressed me about it was that it fooled me. And that's the main thing, because I like to be fooled when I'm watching stories, especially on television, which is so repetitive and so easy to figure out. And this one fooled me. I did not believe that at the end of the story that he would be still laying on that couch. And I thought he really did jump out the window. So for that reason alone, I thought it was rather inventive. But I will agree, I will agree that with Ken, that it's kind of a cheesy episode. And by cheesy, I mean The Twilight Zone obviously is in its early days, and it's not quite a success yet, so it doesn't have much of a budget. So the props are pretty ridiculous looking. I mean, it's not, they didn't go to an amusement park to really film it or anything that would wait in a movie. so we don't really get any sense of fear. It looks all too much like a studio backlot. So that really hurts it, too. Acting-wise, I don't have any feelings about the acting, because what acting? There isn't any acting. There's nothing for anybody to do except for Richard Connelly to convince us that he'll die if he goes to sleep. Now, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know whether that's really possible or not. If you have a medical condition, I know that I've had some nightmares in my life in which I was in great danger, and in that particular nightmare, and I woke up and my heart was racing and I was out of breath, like I'd been somewhere. So I think it is possible to get yourself really overheated over a particular story. Whether or not you can get overheated enough to actually pass away is another matter. I don't know about that. So that's debatable. But there really is no story here. And not only do we not know anything about him, but we don't know about her. Why is she pursuing him? What's in it for her? And why is she trying to kill him? So that's one of the problems with it. But the story, I think that Ken, sometimes in your reviews, especially when you come down really hard on an episode, you fail to understand that it's all, none of it is really happening. I mean, I believe in your, I don't have your review in front of me, but I think in your review you said something about how none of it makes any sense, why this and why that, but it's all just a fantasy. Did you understand while you were watching it that nothing is really happening? It's all in his mind, or did you realize that later?
I should have been watching the ball game instead. But if I'm sitting on my couch, what is the episode doing for me, Bob?
Why does it have to, wait a minute, does every episode have to do something for
yes,
me?
Yes, because I'm
why?
Devoting my time. I could be mowing the grass. I could be doing something else.
But television generally stinks. If you go by that criteria, then
well, no,
I would never turn the TV on.
Television is to entertain, inform you, you know, make you happy, or, you know, stir up your curiosity. That's what television is about.
Well, it can't just be mindless entertainment?
I think the worst thing that television can do, and you can ask the girls, is to disappoint you. Do you want to watch something and then walk out of the movie theater or the television and say, oh, why did I watch that?
Well, it disappoints me every day. That's nothing new.
And you never know if you're going to be disappointed until the end.
Yeah, but I think, see, here's the thing about the Twilight Zone, and I think it causes some trouble, is that there are some episodes that really do teach a lesson or say something about real life, and you go, you know what, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You made a good point there. That's right. I never thought about that. So when you see certain episodes like that, and then you don't see it in other episodes, you go, oh, this is just a lighthearted piece of junk. This is cotton candy. This is nothing. You know, there's no meat on it at all. And so I understand that it's easy to do that, because sometimes this series can be really, really deep, and at other times it seems like nothing. So it really looks like that. But I'm just a little concerned about that, because we're coming up in a couple weeks on an episode called The Fever, which takes place in Las Vegas, in which a slot machine is chasing a man around the casino and in his room. And in your review, you wrote, that's ridiculous. Who ever heard of such a thing? But that's the same thing as this. He's just imagining it. He's not really seeing it. He's not really chasing
but
it.
I don't know. I don't know.
It's the Twilight Zone.
You don't know? You're watching. What do you mean you don't know? You're watching the story. So you must realize that, you know, I mean, it just doesn't make it. Now, I'll grant you this, in this particular episode, we don't really know whether he's dreaming or not. That's different. But I think you have to pay a little more attention and wonder to yourself, is it real or is it fake or what is going on? So that's the only problem I have with that. I gave it a three. I'll be honest with you. I think I was too kind to it. It probably doesn't deserve a three. But, boy, it's certainly not going to be in my bottom 10, because I can think of a lot of episodes that are much worse than this. All right, we're just about up to our midpoint break, and when we come back, we will get into another episode that I believe we are all more in agreement on. So, okay, Dan, take us into the break.
All right, Bob, you guys take a break. We'll be back with more Talking Twilight Zone on Sharevision Radio.
Hi, everyone. Susan McCrae, host of Getting to Know You. On the next show, a retired firefighter paramedic who is part of the second generation of the Big Band era. We're going to explore all of that and more on Getting to Know You with my guest, Ray Eberle Jr., next Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on KSAV.org. ShareaVision Radio.
And that is coming up right after this program at 6:30. Back more Talking Twilight Zone. Here's Bob.
Thank you, Dan. Three astronauts are sent up into space in episode 11 of The Twilight Zone and promptly disappear one by one. The only problem is they don't disappear until after they successfully return to Earth in I Shot an Arrow into the Air. And a common street peddler has a knack not for making a profit, but for changing strangers' lives with the most trivial of items, until he finds the need to come up with something to save his own life in What You Need, episode number 12, 2 weeks from tonight, on Talking Twilight Zone. Also in 2 weeks, listeners will want to stay with KSAV after our show ends, as one of our own will be appearing on another program on KSAV. Lynn will be making a one-time-only appearance over a two-week period on the program Perfectly Frank, where guest hosts pick 10 of their favorite Frank Sinatra songs and provide commentary on why they chose them. Part 1 of the show will take place on Tuesday, September 22nd at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, and 9 p.m. Central Time, and Lynn will be counting down the first 5 of her top 10 Frank Sinatra songs from number 10 to number 6. Part 2 of the show will take place the following week when we will not be on Tuesday, September 29th at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, and 9 Central, and Lynn will be counting down the last 5 of her top Frank Sinatra songs from number 5 to number 1. She will also be providing commentary before each song. I visited a website today that claimed Frank Sinatra recorded well over 1,200 songs over a more than 50-year career, so even if you don't care for Sinatra, you'll want to tune into Lynn's show. At the very least, it should be fun watching her go crazy trying to get that number down to just 10.
It was hard.
Yes, and I was watching TV tonight, and I just, ironically enough, this is just an hour ago, I saw that today is an anniversary of sorts. It was in 1935, on this very date, that Frank Sinatra was discovered at a talent contest. Back in 1935, and that happens, the anniversary is today. So good luck with the show, Lynn. I know many people will want to hear that, so.
Thank you.
Now back to the business at hand. Episode number 10 of season 1 of The Twilight Zone finds a very nervous man on an ocean liner during World War II. Only he doesn't seem to be enjoying himself very much, and here is Kitty to explain why.
We have a gentleman, he's German, and he's on an ocean liner. It's during World War II, so German U-boats are out there, and he's very anxious. This man is played by Nehemiah Persoff. He plays it very well. He's very agitated. He is talking to the crew people, and he's talking to other guests aboard the ship, and what struck me about this initially was that he seemed to be the only person who was worried about German U-boats, and everybody else seemed to be just kind of taking everything in stride. It struck me very odd initially when I first watched it, and also somebody saw that he had a German uniform in his room. And he said, oh, did you used to be in the German Navy? And he said, oh, he basically blew it off. But then he realizes as he goes back up to the bar, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and he realizes something terrible is going to happen, that this ship is going to sink. And yet nobody really seems to be taking his warnings all that seriously. Well, eventually the bombs do start to hit the ship, and he sees pretty much everybody that he was talking to on that ship die one way or the other. And then, strangely enough, the scene switches over to the German U-boat. and we see him as the captain there. And someone is saying to him, you know, we killed a, or we basically, we sunk a liner that had civilians on it. And he was just not all that concerned, and he said, well, what if we're condemned to pay for this later? And he still isn't concerned about it. And then the scene switches back to once again at the beginning of the evening where he's on that liner. So the idea is that he has died, and this is his punishment for all eternity. He has to relive this night every single night. It's called Judgment Night, appropriately enough. And I liked this one. I thought it was well done. It had me questioning things, like I said, because the passengers and the crew really didn't seem to be that concerned that it was World War II and they were going through shipping lanes that German U-boats had been patrolled on. And so that struck me as very odd about the story from the beginning. And that basically the whole point of it is that it's the punishment for that captain. And I thought it was well done. I liked Nehemiah Persoff in that.
What was your rating on this on the poll?
I think I gave it a 4, actually.
Okay. All right, well, let's turn it over to Lynn.
Well, as always, Nehemiah Persoff is great in this role, a terrific actor. This episode gave me goosebumps because when the little girl dropped her doll in the dining room and Lancer picked it up for her, you see that doll floating in the water after the ship was attacked, and you know that the child and her family were killed. It reminded me of the last Titanic movie with Leonardo DiCaprio when they showed images of dead mothers holding their dead babies floating in the freezing ocean. It sent chills through me, just like this zone episode did, and Lancer was going to relive this event every single day of his life. It gave me lots of goosebumps. How about you, Ken?
What rating did you give it, Lynn? Did you give it a high?
I think I honestly don't remember now, but I think I gave it either a 3 or a 4.
Yeah, I think it was 3.
So both of you don't say it's in the classic range.
No, I wouldn't give it classic,
why?
But I thought it was 3, good or excellent.
Why won't you say classic?
It wasn't, in my opinion, a classic episode. I thought it was very good, but not classic.
Too slow.
Well, yeah, maybe.
For me, I didn't give it a classic because it didn't seem like something that, when I think of the Twilight Zone, that's not one of the first episodes I think of.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's, this episode, I think I rated it. I have to go back. It's either a 3 or a 2.5.
It was 3.
3?
Yeah.
You looked it up? Okay. Yeah, so I gave it a good because, you know, it wasn't in the poor range where I would fall asleep. But again, it's not really exciting where you're up on the mountain and you just can't, you're holding on to your seat and you wait until the end. I think the end scene is the key to the whole thing, where you have the Groundhog Day scenario where he repeats it, and that his punishment is he has to go back onto that ship and relive it. Now, what they could have done to make it maybe into the classic range is that first half, you know, maybe he has a love interest, the guy has a love interest, and then when comes time to meet the girl around the corner, that's when the bombs come and the sinking, and he loses the girl, so you feel for the guy. I was wondering, how else could it be into the classic range?
So you wanted to personalize it.
Yeah, maybe a little more touching, maybe care for the guy. You know, when he seems to be afraid in that first half, you know, what is he afraid of? And you're not really scared. And then when the second half, and when the bombs come, and the girl, she gets taken overboard too, then you start to feel what's going on here. So, yeah, it's kind of like an okay episode. So that's okay if you know, to sit through it. If I see it again, maybe I'll watch it once or twice more, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, I think it's slow. It's slow to develop. And there's no surprises in it. It's not going to, if you were paying attention, it's not going to take you more than about 5 minutes to figure out what's going on here. And just like the episode before, Perchance to Dream, it suffers again from a low budget production in that, you know, doesn't really feel like they're really on a ship. So you know, it's not exactly Titanic. Of course, I don't expect it to be like that, but some episodes are really helped along by special effects or by creating a certain mood. Here, it's just a lot of fog and a lot of dark, and so it's a little bit difficult to buy into it. In the few minutes we have left on the show, I wanted to take this into a different area because I believe Rod Serling wrote this. If anybody knows better than that, say so, but I believe he wrote it.
I gave it a four, by the way.
Huh?
I'm sorry, I just looked mine up. I gave it a four, an excellent, and so did
you. Oh, okay, I didn't know that. All right. And I think that Serling was trying to say something more than just write an episode here, and that is that this is World War II, and we're talking about Nazi Germany. Every time you talk about them, you're not just talking about committing murder, but it's always called a crime against humanity, which, of course, it was. And the question is, what is the punishment for that? Is there enough of a punishment for that? Is the crime so horrible that even death is not good enough? And so in this story, you have this man who attacked this ship full of innocent people, and he doesn't just die. That's not enough for him. He's got to know what it was for them to die that way, and he's got to do it repeatedly. In real life, Adolf Hitler committed suicide, so we never got to him. But suppose we had gotten to him, and what would happen? We would put him on trial, and we would have hanged him. But is that really is almost too good for him? That's the problem with that. I believe in the death penalty, but sometimes crimes are so horrible, you feel to yourself, I don't know. Maybe we're just putting them out of their misery. So I think that in reality, that was the bigger message here. And I think that, you know, in real life, in a crime against humanity like this, that the only, of course, can't do it, but the best punishment would have been, you know, for those involved in Nazi Germany at that time, to know what it was like to be put in a concentration camp for no reason other than who you were, to be thrown half alive into a pit and shot, or to be taken to a shower only to have the gas turned on, things like that. And under those conditions, you might have to live in hell over and over again. Kitty, don't you feel that that would be a just punishment for a crime like that? And isn't that what's going on here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the idea being that what you don't pay for in this life, you pay for in the next. And it was a fitting ending that he, you know, he's basically been condemned to relive that night from the perspective of the passengers on that ship for all eternity. He doesn't get a reprieve. I mean, you kind of look at it and you say, well, the people on that ship, they only had to go through it once. But this guy, he's got to go through it over and over and over.
And that I think
is where the punishment fits the crime.
Right, and I think in real life that would have been a more fitting punishment for those involved in Nazi Germany and the destruction they wreaked upon the world. If you've ever seen the film Judgment of Nuremberg, I mean the officers who were arrested and brought to trial simply sat there, you know, with no emotion at all. They just they knew they had been caught. They knew they were going to be executed, and it's almost as if they had just given up and said, "All right, well, let's just get it over with." And somehow it's just not enough. It's just not enough. I wanted them to really feel the pain and the misery and the agony of the people that they really hurt. And, you know, you can simply say, well, they got executed. What else do you want? I don't know. I think I want a little bit more than that. And that's one thing I took out of this episode, that this one person in this obviously fantasy story, at the very least, got to know what it was like. It's not so cut and dry that you just do something horrible and then you pay for it with your life. Sometimes you need to pay for it repeatedly with more than your life, and that's what happened here. All right, we're just about out of here. Thank you very much, and we will be back in 2 weeks, but Ken will not. He's going on a trip. Ken, have a wonderful vacation.
Okay.
Have a good time.
We'll see you back when we get there. Okay, Dan, that's just about it for us.
Well, thank you, Bob, and thank you, gang. Great job. Thank you for bringing Lynn on board so she can do Perfectly Frank. And Ken, you have a great time. 2 weeks. The folks will be back on ShareAVision Radio.